All right, I'm going to turn on the recorder just so we can upload this later on. I don't know if we have anyone on the phone. I heard one beep. We don't really have a phone. We just have the Skype. Hey, who's there?
Leonardo Uribe.
Hello, Leonardo. Did that number work for you? Did that number work for you? Good. Okay. So we're going to get started. Let me just got a nice flip chart here. I like flip charts. So I didn't really make an agenda for this meeting because we only have an hour, and I know everyone's really busy at Java 1, so I'm glad you all came. But I really wanted to just do this as the kickoff for JSF 2.3 and Servlet 4.0. So I would like to start with introductions, and then I would like to put up the tentative schedule, because we don't have like gobs of time, you know. We need to move with purpose, and then we're kind of open to what we do with the rest of the time. I'd like to really take the most advantage of the fact that we're all in the same room. So I think design discussions or kind of high-level ideas would probably be a good thing to do. And also, I want to also set the tone for what I'd like to do with this whole expert group going forward. I'd like to keep it very collaborative, very open, and if people want to change the process of how we're doing things, I want you guys all to know that please speak up, you know, and I'm open to how we change things. So, does it make sense to, since we have both Servlet and JSF expert group members here, does it make sense to spend this time focused on any kind of issues that are good for both specs to deal with? Like we mentioned server push in our thing. I knew you had some ideas about direct to DOM rendering. So does that make sense to focus on common issues right here?
Sure.
Okay. All right. I do want to give people opportunity to just, if they have any venting or things that they'd really like to see done. And
right.
That's why I sprung it on you. If I told you that in advance, you'd have a gigantic list.
I've got notes.
All right. Okay. So let's start with introductions. My name's Ed Burns, and I'm very pleased to be also helping out with Servlet in addition to my usual role as JSF. So we'll go around this way.
Okay, my name is Justin Lee. I'm a former glass fisher with these guys. I work on WebSockets, both implementing the protocol and the spec with Greg and
cool.
Company.
And so you're with Mongo, right?
I'm with Mongo, and we are in the final stages somewhere in the process of the paperwork for Mongo to join as a corporate entity.
Right, so Mongo will be a formal JCP member.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Cool. And therefore on the Servlet expert group.
Yeah.
Is there any other expert groups that Mongo will be part of?
I don't know. I think Mongo's kind of a weird shop. It's because it's mostly C++ guys. I think there are two of us in the company that know what the JCP is. Or at least there were before this conversation started. There's a few more now. But since we will be corporate members, it'll be interesting to look around and see where we might be able to contribute.
Right.
Mongo is quite JSON-centric internally, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, there's quite a bit. So, JSON schema and validation and such could be interesting places to collaborate as well, because those are things we're looking at some point.
Okay.
I'm Neil Griffin, and I'm with LifeRay, and I'm representing LifeRay on JSF 2.3 and Servlet 4 and MVC and Portlet 3, and maybe the next version of JSF Portlet Bridge, if that happens.
All right.
And WSOP.
All right.
And I try to get some sleep in my spare time.
I'm Greg Wilkins. I've been trying to get write a HTTP server for 19 years now. Still haven't got it right. Still working on it. So hopefully on Jetty's 20th birthday next year, we'll have it finished. Maybe.
All right.
And I've been on the Servlet expert group since 2.4 or 2.6, I can't remember, one of those ones.
I'm Ken Paulson. I'm with eBay, and eBay's been stuck on an older version of JSF, and we're no longer stuck, and so I'm actually looking forward to seeing what improvements we can make in JSF 2.3 and helping out.
And do please speak up for the benefit of those on the phone.
And Ken, you were also a former...
I was a former Oracle employee about 3-4 years ago, and enjoying eBay equally as much, if not more. I used to work on Glassfish.
So I'm Keto Man. I've been an extra group member of JSF for a long time, since 1.2, actually. Also been a member of the JSF Portlet Bridge and the Portlet Expert Groups and also CDI, but right now it's just JSF and Portlet EGs. And I do lots of consulting and training.
No, you can go ahead, Manfred, please.
Okay, I'm Manfred Reed. I'm your JSF 2.3 co-specialty together with Ed and MVC co-specialty as well.
Yeah. I'm Werner Kalt. I was in the expert group of JSF 2.2, also in a couple of others, especially the EE umbrella. I already joined the CDI2 expert groups and considering to do that for EE8 and MVC, and I'm also in the Fortlet 3 expert group, so I'm especially looking for things that matter to both, and potentially I may also join the expert group, but I'll see. I'm also in a lot of expert groups, so I try to focus on
sure.
new items, but since I'm also a long time member of the EE umbrella, of course I try to find synergies, like for example, as we saw between AtInCheck and CDI, so
right.
For example, from the MVC point of view, also since we have at least one who's expecting to both, somewhat promising that this may be rather synergistic.
Yeah.
And you also represent the EC, the JCP.
Yes, I'm the. At least until the elections or longer, depending on how the outcome is. I'm the only individual left in the EC for the time being.
Mm-hmm. You're the only one who pays attention to the E emails too, so it's good.
I'm Xing Wai. I have worked on the JSR 196 before, and then I also work on the server 3.1. I'm a co-spec lead with Rajiv. And now, the server 4.0.
All right, so the next item of action is to go through the agenda, schedule. I'm going to just put that up on the flipboard, but first I need to pull it up in front of my own eyes because I haven't memorized it. So I'm opening up the slides from the presentation that Xing Wai and I gave just moments ago. And here's the schedule slide. There it is. So can you read this to me as I write it up there?
Okay.
Okay, so let's see. What's our first thing that we've done? I want to draw some checkboxes.
Okay, for the EG form is Q3.
Form EG Q3
2014. Yeah.
Yes. All right.
And then we have the early draft is Q1. 2015.
EGR Q1 CY 15.
And public review is Q3.
Q3 CY 15.
And proposed final draft is Q4.
ERD Q4.
And
15. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Final release is Q3 2016.
Okay.
Now, is that because that's the tentative calendar for Java EE8?
Yes.
Overall,
yes. That is Java EE8.
You might finish before that, or you might finish just, a day before.
Yeah. Right. So we'll try to align the schedule with the Java EE.
Because it seems like there's a lot of time
between
those two.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is nice. To have that time to get
Yeah,
in the past we've done you know, lots of different, we've done a couple different iterations between proposed final drafts. We've done multiple proposed final drafts between the first and the final one. Several release candidates. So I would like, we got a couple different approaches that we're going to be doing here. On the JSF side, and we'll talk about this at the BOSS tonight, we really are trying to have 2.3, from Oracle's perspective, be all about polish and making everything fit well together and alignment with other specs and just kind of finishing it off and really getting it in a good state, making it really, really solid. Now, we also would like to open it up to the community if they would like to drive some of these issues and they have some really cool, exciting new ideas, like the one you shared with me earlier or the one we'll be talking about tonight that Ian put out there, and Hito has some ideas too, in partnership with the community. And we're going to really rely on the community to design and help and implement and move it forward, because we have a lot of different stuff going on at Oracle and we can't really commit to too much as far as features, you know, new features goes for the JSF perspective. On the server perspective, what we're trying to do is just have the HTTP2 and a few of the features exposed. So,
question on that. Why was it decided to go to a 4.0 rather than a 3.2? Because that kind of invokes more radical changes than
that
I certainly
am
interested in.
Well, to me, I think it's HTTP2 is just a big change. You know, from a user perspective, and then like, yeah, come on, this is the first revision to HTTP that there's been since, you know, 97 or so. So that's why I felt it was justified to go to 4.
But does that imply, I mean, that's kind of behind the scenes mostly changes, but does that imply like drastic user-facing API refactorings?
No.
No? Does it preclude it? That's
I would say yes, we're not going to move on to really.
Don't let me go.
Okay, well, that was, I just want to get that, because that when I first saw 4.0, I thought, oh, we can like
take the lid off.
We can streamline APIs in places and break things.
I have not been thinking along those lines. But
the word breaking is already a no-no.
As much as there's lots of things, you know, if I had the time machine, I'd try.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, I think we're stuck with the major part, major architecture.
Right.
Okay. That's fair. I just want to make sure.
It could have gone either way. I just thought 3.2, which wasn't enough. So, but is everyone on the JSF side, now that I've, you know, put that out there, does anyone have any problem with us taking that approach? Or is anyone feeling let down by that? Like, oh, man, I was hoping that Oracle would really get on board and, you know, commit lots of resources to doing a whole new thing and extending the capabilities of JSF and broadening the scope and all that stuff, because we're not really planning to do that.
Well, I can't say, this is Neil, I can't say that I'm let down by it, mm-hmm. but I was hoping to see a couple more bigger ticket items, like mm-hmm. the thing I was sharing.
Well, I'm open to it.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because my concern is, you know, JSF is old, mm-hmm. and even though there's lots and lots and lots of innovation and lots of reasons to still use it, and we've adapted the technology to, you know, for mobile and for push and all kinds of reasons, I think it's important for people to see that there's at least, like on the level of JSF 2.2, when we had faces flows and, mm-hmm. and some bigger ticket items like that, mm-hmm. it'd be nice to see at least one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and if that calls for greater participation from the EG to get it done,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, it certainly will.
And yeah.
So we're open to the idea.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the smaller things we'll talk about in the meeting tonight is the ability to do an AJAX request to the server that doesn't have a view with it. So you're in the JSF lifecycle, but you don't have a specific view, but you do have a client window. So within the scope of a client window, you can do AJAX for that. But that's not a on the same level as the flows.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would expect a lot of those things, which other frameworks already do on top of JSF, to be some of the things we would be considering.
Exactly.
Anyways.
Yeah,
That's why we're so happy to have some of the other utility framework vendor, so to say, on board and that are willing to participate back with their open source product so that we can actually do that particular thing and actually get it in the standard instead of having people rely on something outside of the standard.
Right.
Okay, so it's good at the kickoff meeting to talk about scope.
I wanted to make sure we established that. Any other questions about scope issues? Leonardo, can you hear us okay?
Yes, you hear me there?
I can hear you there, yes.
Okay. Yeah, just I was thinking about the flow concept, is a concept that we have per page.
Right.
Right? But we don't have the concept about a fragment of the window.
Yes,
you
of
know,
course.
You know what I mean? So,
yes.
So, for example, some months ago, I tried an example that you take one fragment of the page and you create a component that navigates, that uses the navigation algorithm in that part of the page to do some using phase scope.
Right, I know.
But I found that flow scope is very has the limitation that it applied to the world page.
Yes, I know. In fact, even in ADF, they have a fragment concept, and that was something that we specifically left undone in 2.2. So I think the task flow fragment thing is exactly the kind of thing that fits.
So I suppose this is a good improvement if we can do the necessary changes in GZ, so we could have a context that is like a flow context, but it goes in the fragment.
Okay. Well, that's the kind of size issue that we're thinking about. So. Okay. So I'd like to, can I turn the running of the meeting over to you now that we're getting into the more technical portion of it? So like, you know, in terms of discussion with like what can we do with the combined expert groups here in the room? So, well, I guess I'll review those, the thing I mentioned in to start us off. During our talk, I talked about server push and how it might be exposed in JSF. So for those of you that were in the room, does that fit with what you were seeing as a use case for server push from a servlet perspective, Greg and Justin?
I mean, I've got quibbles about the API choices, but I think that's for a later point of meeting. What I guess my major concern about push at the moment is I think the JSF and servlet talking together is a really good way of there needs to be things on both sides of the fence there.
Right.
JSF is a really great use case of a framework that has really good knowledge about not only how the pages are constructed, but you can track users and stuff like that. So you can actually build up a really great view of what a client might need to have pushed to it. But from a service spec point of view, I think we have to find a second use case to drive the push API, because generalizing from an example of one is pretty sucky.
Right.
And so I think we need to find, I mean, as a server implementer, we're going to be doing a little bit of stuff ourselves, but our expertise is not so much in the content generation side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be really good to find another content generating partner who has a different worldview than JSF, because whatever we come up with has to work out with the complete knowledge stuff and other frameworks that have less complete knowledge.
Right.
On that note, since I'm also the MVC spec lead, that's definitely also on the table for MVC. If you guys want to, you know, collaborate on that one on the MVC side, I would really appreciate it as well.
Like some type of resource knowledge feature?
Well, I mean, at least how it needs to be supported from the MVC angle. So the MVP spec angle, I should say, because
right.
obviously JS has
And the browser vendors are just coming up from getting HTTP2 out there, and they're really keen to test out push ideas and see how it works and things. So we've got push deployed now, and it works really good on that dim slice of the demo, but it's not working well on deep interactions with websites. So it's, I think we probably won't need to do a phase of really trying some prototypes out and things like that.
Well, let's take some time right now to brainstorm, like, who would we ask for a second viewpoint on this? A CDN company?
Well, like, CDN has to be very aware of push, but I don't know if they do it from Java perspective. Do you know any CDNs that are using Java API, Server API?
I've got a buddy that's all C++.
Yeah.
And they do C++.
I mean...
Well, SEO, how about is there any kind of SEO angle that we could look at for... push?
I know someone who does, she wrote a web server in Java. Mm-hmm. That would be the server I think might even be more low level than mm-hmm. server, but it's not necessarily SEO, but it is definitely targeted marketing. But that might be more of an SEO sort of thing.
Well, I'm not so concerned about it, even if they're on, it's more of a thought experiment
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So it doesn't have to be someone who does it in Java, anyone who does it at all. I mean, because mm-hmm. I agree with you, having only one use case doesn't really validate the need for the feature, mm-hmm. to be honest.
I can reach out to this. I don't know in great detail what he's doing, but it might be related, so I'll reach out to him.
Now, I can reach out to my friend, too. He's totally back-end CDN, so he's former Java. He moved to C++ from Java. So,
because the CDN case is really quite interesting. Cause they don't get the index.html request.
Right.
They just get
the all the
resources.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in your travels on the HTTP working group, when there's been discussions about push, what kind of stakeholders do they have on there?
Not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So much of HTTP2 has been driven by the browser vendors with their, you know, wanting to render the page as quickly as possible without as much deepening of how that page is put together on the server side.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go look through my users and things like that and try and, you know, think of some exemplars of different frameworks, you know, ways of assembling our pages. I'm a little bit horribly out of touch, actually, though, in the way the different, you know, ways of assembling content. But you know,
would media companies be a good fit?
Yeah, I mean, the newspaper homepage is the classic example of what push it to.
Okay.
Well, I was more thinking along the line of like an ABC, NBC kind of type of thing. I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah.
also literally content.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like video and audio, because. Even those could be technically pushed.
Well, because I think a lot of people, because the examples are driven by, you know, style.css and logo.png, a lot of people think that you can only push static content, but you can push dynamic content, which may vary for each and every user, and you can push non-200 responses as well. You can push 304s and push redirections and all sorts of stuff. So it's... not all of them are guaranteed to work in the browser. But yeah, so diverse content would be good to get on board.
Yeah, I think it's tricky to do it right because you don't know whether the browser already downloaded stuff.
You have hints, like, you know, say if modified or if matched headers in there,
yeah.
it's saying that their cache is hot-ish,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it's limited knowledge. So, I mean, the JSF is a good use case at one extreme, but you can probably track whether you push those resources
yeah.
to some users if you really want to get to that level. But other environments won't have that.
Yeah, so then it means that we would like to build a server API so that it will let the JSF or whatever framework to have this knowledge of how
yeah.
much information has been pushed.
Well, I think it's my feel is it's the framework's job to keep the knowledge, and so it's up to a framework to decide
mm-hmm.
how much knowledge
yeah.
it keeps and how it collects it and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Sure.
But we just have to be aware that there's going to be different models of knowledge and different levels of knowledge, and make sure their API, like the first APIs I posted up was
mm-hmm.
One of the issues I was worried about is like cross-context push. And it's kind of like, well,
he brought up.
And it's like, is, you know, part of me thinks, do we really need to support that? Wasn't, you know, cross-content that takes this such a bad idea? And because to support it, it kind of perverts, you know, limits our choices on the API and things. So it'd be interesting to get feelers if people are going to be cross-content push.
Well, you were thinking of even broader cross-context. You were thinking of cross-context in servlet context, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you explain the concern you had raised?
Well, I don't know that it's a concern. It's more of a curiosity
item. Okay.
As to whether it would be supported. And I mean, if you're trying to proxy stuff on your server side and aggregate it and then send it in a single stream to the browser, because your connection might be better than the browser making those connections separately, is that supported and how is it implemented? I don't know. So I didn't have ideas on whether I wanted it or not.
Well, I mean,
it's an interesting scenario.
I mean, we're already doing that. The Jetty demo I'm doing this afternoon is actually Jetty proxying in front of a WordPress. And so when we get a request in, we simultaneously send asynchronous requests to WordPress saying, you know, we're requesting these resources, why we send the push promises the other way.
Yeah.
So, and then we aggregate them in the middle and push them all out.
Yeah, so does that change the markup in order to refer to those URLs locally? Or?
No, it doesn't. It's the happenstance. It works in that one. But the issue you get is that when you get the match shift modified request, if I had modified the markup so I knew where the content was, I could do a better job of making that synthetic request for the push.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the resource is coming from not me, how do I make it a synthetic if modified synth request? Because I don't know when it was last modified.
Right.
And so there's issues there.
Well, okay, so we need to find some other justifications. I wonder, any of the people on the HTTP BIS working group that you formed relationships with that you could ask to point us to people?
Yeah, I'll go and review.
Okay.
And certainly, I'll get the Firefox guys as a client view, get them to tune in or make sure that we keep them in the loop somehow. They seem the ones most progressed in push.
Hmm.
Chrome guys are probably doing it, but they're doing it more internally.
Okay.
You brought up a good point, though, about proxies, because obviously those will impact everything happens as well. So if we do any work, we need to make sure that those are at least capable of dealing with that.
Hmm. And there's also, because proxies might actually
do the companies. I've worked for so many different companies that many of them have issues with proxies one way or the other, depending on what product they used and how sophisticated it was to lock things out or still allow things.
So that's definitely something for the service, you know. The
I fear for proxies at the moment. I think the push to TLS is making them an endangered species, even though there were very valid business cases and use cases for them.
You're saying that they might basically be disintermediated by the push to TLS?
Well, if you go TLS and end-to-end encryption, it's very hard for corporate firewalls to get in there, or even, you know, to assemble components within a data center to, you know, to do push cases and direct traffic in different ways and things. If the desire is to go TLS end to end, and so much so that, you know, even if you get your TLS offloaded, if they, you know, if you offload your TLS, then you don't get the chance to negotiate the ALPM handshake, so you don't get into that protocol choice consideration, and then there's all these extra cipher requirements and things, and so, you know, very hard. If anyone knows proxy implementers and anywhere from in computer proxies to corporate firewall proxies, get them to raise their voices, because they're just deafening silence in the IDF.
Well, that's why I'm bringing it up. I mean, obviously, I don't know them, but I'm saying that definitely will have an impact. But
yeah.
If it's not supported, then, you know, we can do all that stuff, same thing we do with the JSF, but if it's not supported by someone, then it won't be used.
And it's really interesting as well, because I can see a merger deployment where if JSF goes to all the effort to build up a good knowledge about what to push and you know what resources the client's got, it may get deployed in an environment where the HTTP2 doesn't terminate in the application, so it terminates somewhere else. You've got all this knowledge, so maybe we need standard models of how to pass that knowledge across to someone else who can do the pushing, be it a content CDN or a proxy or something to that effect. Because there's going to be, eventually, 10 years' time, everything will be H2. So if JSF goes to the effort of building up this information, it'll be used 100%. But in between time, if you're building up this information and it's only being used to 25%, 30% of your clients, that's a lot of cycles to invest to not use. So you want to make sure you can give it to someone who can use it if you can't use it yourself.
So I'd like to frame that as a question. Is it possible to encode the knowledge of what a browser will be needing in such a way that it's describable and transportable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that an accurate way to just frame the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which kind of goes to your DOM ideas.
Right.
It's just like the index to the DOM.
Right. Just trying to capture that. Well, since we're brainstorming here, why don't you share with the room the idea that you shared we were walking from this session to this room,
okay,
so we can get it on the recorder, too.
Okay, that'd be great. How many guys do we have on the call?
Anyone on the call except for Leo?
Yeah, this is Ian here.
Oh, Ian, welcome. Great.
Hey, thanks, Ed.
Does Ian hold on?
Ian Lotto, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so I was just talking with Ed about how we see the technology pendulum swing over the years, and I'll just try and sum it up very briefly, where back in the day we did mainframe and we were charged by the hour, and then we all started buying servers. Now we don't buy servers anymore. We're back in the cloud and we're paying by the hour on Amazon. We all used to build desktop applications, and then we're going to be all web, and now we start building things for phones that are native, which in a sense is kind of a desktop application in a sense because it's a native client. Then I saw an article where Twitter decided to move part of their rendering logic back to the server and to rely less on the JavaScript than the client, because it wasn't happening fast enough. And then we were talking about the domain study about loss in revenue when pages load slowly, right, and things like that. So the idea is, in JSF we have these different phases in the life cycle, and the last one is render response. An idea that I have is perhaps one more phase, decorate response, where you have the opportunity where render response would render into a server-side DOM, and then decorate response would have an opportunity to invoke Nashorn. And so JSF would download any of the JavaScript resources that are needed and then execute the JavaScript server-side so that a fully decorated HTML document is delivered to the browser, and you don't have to rely on the rendering engine of the browser for speed. Anyway, it seems like it's a challenging thing, but rendering to a server-side DOM has been done before. Icefaces has done it for 10 years now. They did it for server-side DOM diff. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying, the JavaScript engine needs a DOM to operate against server-side in order to do this. So that's the idea. It seems kind of like a big-ticket item, But I think it could be a big win in keeping JSF relevant, because we, when we talk about server-side rendering, it's kind of an old idea. Well, I think it's time for that old idea to get some new life back in it,
because JSF is so very good at delivering up these the markup at a minimum, why not fully decorated markup, at least for the initial download of that first page, you know. Subsequently, of course, JavaScript is executing in the client, and that's kind of a bigger problem to solve. You know, do you keep that in sync with what's going on the server? I don't know. But anyway, that's the idea. Mm-hmm. Perhaps an additional phase to the JSF lifecycle. Or is this an idea that's better left out there in open source land for a vendor to implement as an extension? I don't know. But
well, they can already do that. I mean, you can
create
your own lifecycle, so you can add it in a page if you want to.
Yeah, the lifecycle factory is limited. I've had problems with that. I tried to have a different lifecycle for different portlet phases, and it didn't work.
Hmm.
It didn't work. I mean, but that's probably another time to discuss that. But
okay.
Anyway, that's the idea, and I just wanted to know if anybody thought it was worth pursuing or if it was a harebrained scheme, or
Would this be on a per user basis? We would do this.
Well, it would be on a per response basis.
Yeah. Sounds very expensive.
That's what I was thinking.
It could be very computationally expensive on the server, and so it's not something that you want to do for all applications. You know, it's something that you would want to do if you need it. But if time is money, and if you can throw hardware at a problem in order to not be CPU bound and get your content delivered, then maybe you win. Now, JSF is also tends to be used in, I was listening to something Keto said in one of his newscasts, where JSF tends to be used in use cases where it's some type of data-driven, you know, some type of CRUD type
mm-hmm.
of application. Does that content need to be rendered really fast? Are people losing money? Or is this more like an eBay situation where, you know, you need to get a page to somebody so that they can click buy really fast? Or I don't know if the use cases for JSF support it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology is there.
So if it's after the render phase, we're already in HTML, it can also be implemented as a filter, I suppose, right? And it wouldn't even be, JSF-specific.
It could be a servlet filter or a portlet filter. That the problem is that it would have to parse the HTML,
right.
Where if you render it directly into a server-side DOM, kind of pre-parsed.
And one of the things I think we also have to consider actually in Servlet 4.0 is that Servlet 3.1 really broke the whole concept of filtering content.
How do you mean? Because I'm new.
It's really difficult. When you wrap out the string and you see writes coming in, you don't know if they're asynchronous writes or synchronous writes. And if code is written thinking it's a synchronous write and it's an asynchronous write, they won't call is ready in between each write, and they'll write. And so every single filter that does that, like gzip filter and stuff like that, is if the content's coming asynchronously, they're broken. And then you sit down and say, oh, well, okay, I'll just extend these methods, and how hard can it be? And it's a doozy to any wrapping of input stream or output stream to make it be both, work for asynchronous and synchronous content and be efficient and lock-free and race-free is just horrendous. And it's almost, if we wanted to justify our 4.0 billing, that we might need another interception point to get at the data in a way to filter that data and parse that data without having that, without knowing whether it's blocking or non-blocking, and without all that, I mean, it's a bit of a faff anyway, isn't it? You've got to wrap the response object so that when someone calls get output stream, you can wrap the output stream,
right.
All of them for the call get writer, and all this stuff. It's kind of like, so you've done all your stuff to parse bytes, and you have to provide a version that does characters as well. It'd be much better to come all the way down and have a single intercept point that works both.
Okay.
So at the moment the gzip filter is the main one, and most containers are building it inside themselves anyway.
Yeah.
But if there are ongoing requirements to filter content, then I think 4.0 could look at providing another intercept point.
Okay, to capture that, you're basically asserting and demonstrating that Servlet 3.1 broke the way filtering is done due to the way we insist on wrapping things a certain way.
Didn't break it, made it extremely
difficult.
That
made
it very hard.
Complexified.
Well, I like the word.
Just coined it right now.
Complicated.
If we couldn't do the server side decoration in a filter, then, or if it just makes it really hard,
complicated.
Then, one request I would have is that we consider just adding this extra phase at the end of the lifecycle, and it's a NOAA, but it's there so that it can be taken care of as an extension point.
Is there any reason why you couldn't do it with a custom vendor kit? I mean,
With the you could do it with like a phase listener where you're listening to after phase.
Didn't my customer make it? It's already being used.
Yeah. So you could do it like that.
Because I'm a little bit confused. If you're talking about, you know, the DOM, I mean, that is a representation. So, you know, if you're talking about a custom render kit, wouldn't that work though?
No, actually, I'm not talking about a custom render kit. I'm talking more about a custom DOM response writer type thing, where the response writer is writing into a server-side DOM.
Okay.
And so you just render, all your render kits that are already out there can leverage writing into this server-side DOM. But then you have this extra opportunity to decorate what's in the server-side DOM before it gets, you know, two string five written back up.
I kind of like the idea of having a very, it would be very fascinating to see what people could do with a phase where they actually can use the same JavaScript or some of the same JavaScript using the device.
Yeah.
That would be very fascinating to see.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it could just be a phase with a no-op out of the box. But it's there, or we do something with it.
The complexity that you're adding is a little bit tricky because of the fact that you're state saving as well. When are you going to do that? You know, because that is now really the last part. I mean, render response is really render response
plus
state
saving.
So are you going to plug in between?
It would be after. It would be totally after. It's simply decorating the HTML, and I can't see how it could affect state.
Well, it shouldn't then. I mean,
it should not be affecting state. Right. It's just simply affecting the rendered markup.
Well, I mean, just want to make that clear, because otherwise, you know, it's like, historically speaking, you know, state saving is the last step of the entire life cycle. So if you're going to change that, that is, in my opinion, a rather fundamental change. Even if it might not cause anything, it is still a fundamental change.
Technically, is it not part of the final stage of render response?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay,
but that's kind of the problem is that, you know, restore view, we have one.
Right.
Which is really restoring state, because that's really what it is.
Yeah.
We don't have a state view phase at all. You know, so that's the, kind of the disjunct there. So that's why I'm bringing it up. If you're wanting to add an additional phase, I'm not sure if we should leave only at that point. Because then it's like...
You should maybe add a save state phase.
Maybe a save state phase, or maybe also just make...
Just to clarify.
Or add methods to the life cycle that allow you to manipulate the life cycle. Because right now it's parsing, right?
Yeah. And this would be what I'm proposing. So lifecycle that executes everything except the render, which I think was primarily for portlets, right? So that it could be broken up over the,
right.
The original design at least. But,
right.
This would be just like that. You know, it's an additional call that you have to put in base servlet or an important bridge.
Right.
So anyway, I've spent too much time talking about
That's
it.
All right.
I just wanted to get the idea out there to see if anybody thought it was worth doing, because that would bring the technology pendulum swing back to JSF.
Interesting.
I mean, JavaScript on the server is something only a few companies were doing, you know, 6-7 years ago, and now it's all the rage.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big. Server-side JavaScript is huge, and with Nashorn and SE8, it just seems like all the stars are aligned for something like this.
I don't want to get into it now, but at the BOF, Ian's going to be talking about the idea of doing how JSF could integrate with with client-side frameworks like Angular and things like
yeah.
that. And the only proposal that I have really was just to do component rendering via JSON as opposed to HTML, which to me is kind of a no-brainer. It's a lot faster and a lot more, like, you know, the payload size of rendering when you're rendering a data table is often ridiculous. And really all you're doing is saying, okay, I want to change four properties or these three rows or something like that.
But you know what's funny? I have a colleague at LifeRay, and in our JavaScript library in Allo UI, we have a data table JavaScript component that does exactly that. It gets JSON back and then, you know, paints a table
mm-hmm.
based on the JSON. And my colleague, I don't know if he wrote it or not, but he was saying, you know, it's just on the iPad, it's just too slow. You know, it's blinking and this and that. He said, I'd much rather render the HTML table on the server. And then I'm scratching my head. I'm thinking, well, I know a framework that does that. You know,
but that's not what I'm saying. That's the initial render. That's actually one of the things I do like about JSON, the initial render. You get to the JSON up front.
Right.
Because I'm talking about updates.
I'm
only talking about updates. Because in that situation, I don't want the whole table and all 40 rows back.
I mean, that's the whole intent of, you know, getting a partial execution. You want small.
I mean,
he doesn't want the markup.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
not even a TR is too much.
You want that limit, the amount of data.
Right. Like, we had a client where we initially had slow browsers, and even just updating all the buttons on the screen was noticeable. So we, you know, not just to disable button, we can render the whole button again. You know,
so you just rather replace the cell text.
Yeah, and a lot of these component suites have client-side JavaScript anyway. Like, and they can do it. Like, it's totally possible, but it'd be nice to just have built-in hooks.
That one I can totally see.
Yeah, where instead of render a JSON, you know, pretty easy to do.
Yep.
I had one thing that I think is relevant to both expert groups, and that is browser sniffing. I know it's a very complicated issue, but I feel like this should be, like, you shouldn't have to find a third party library if you want to find out what more about the device other than what's in the header.
You have to keep a database, like there's Whirlpool, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is this database that I think you have to pay money for.
Yeah,
right?
You
and
do.
To use it. You know, I have to get that out of date fast.
Well, that really ties back to the HTML working group and who's, you know, which companies are involved in that and, you know, what user agents are they going to send. I mean, really that comes down to the overarching industry. Can we get them to a point where they're publishing that in a way that is consumable?
Or
even relying on something like
or
that.
Or even agree on what a capability is, whether
yes.
let alone whether they all support it, you know.
Well,
desperately needed.
I didn't even know this, but apparently there's been a de-scoping of a lot of features in HTML5 that were formerly in the HTML5 spec that are now going to be put in. You know, they already were separate subspecs, but now they're not a part of HTML5 anymore. So apparently someone at W3C, there's this, let me find the URL for this. I was looking at this just the other day. HTML5. Yeah, Google search for HTML5 plan 2014. That's the first hit for me. HTML5 plan 2014. And it says here, the HTML working group chairs and the protocols formats chair have been asked by the W3C team to provide a credible plan to get HTML5 to recommendation status by 2014. Challenges remain in achieving this goal. And so what they basically did was they whopped a bunch of stuff out, like WebSocket, server send events, like really fundamental things that were in HTML5 are now not a part of it anymore. And so this document here justifies their decision to do that by saying modularity. HTML5 is good at modularity. That's what it says. Just look at the document.
Well played.
So many technologies that were originally defined in HTML5 are now defined in separate specifications. Microdata, Canvas, web messaging, web workers, web storage, WebSocket.
So what are they including?
WebRTC.
And the web components are
right.
Shadow DOM is out.
I'm not surprised about that.
So this ties into browser detection, because this is going to make it even harder.
True, maybe it's not even feasible, but it's something I wonder, because every time you want to get more information about a client, you've always got to find some sort of card library. And even less information than a full-fledged database, but you just want a little more information about what you're dealing with.
To put a blunt question forward to you, I mean, how does eBay deal with it?
We have our own detection stuff that we do, but if there were some standard, maybe this is beyond the servlet or otherwise, but if there was a standard that we would implement or that others would implement, maybe we would eventually converge on, even if the data isn't part of it, at least an API that developers could write against to get it, and then you plug in. I don't know. I mean, that's what JSF originally did, is we said this is the standard so the tool developers can, or
right.
tool non-providers can write against it so we can build applications. Maybe there
right.
needs to be something in this area, too.
So from the servlet API perspective, that's, you know, I mean...
I like to rule it out as too low level, or too...
Well,
I think servlet...
Undefined.
Within the server, we actually do a little bit of user agent detection ourselves anyway, because... There are some HTTP features that are properly implemented in some browsers. But it's like putting it into the API doesn't mean we can solve the problem. If someone gave me the lever big enough to solve the problem, then I'd happily put it in the API. Mm-hmm. Who's got the carrot or the stick that's going to make the browser vendors lay it out what their capabilities are?
Well, coming to back to the HTML5 working group, obviously they realized that they have to deliver something. So it sounds like, to me, it sounds like, unfortunately, you know, browser sniffing, yeah, would probably never make it because of it involving too many partners.
Right. That's a problem we're just going to have to live with. Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of website you're doing. You know, if you're doing a website that requires login, you can make them set their preferences, I guess. You know, if you don't do that, yeah, then...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're left to.
Sure. This is another sort of random thought. One of the things that we get with the server-side framework by JSF is some level of abstraction. So, we could even look at things like, there's HTML templating. I don't know where that is in the HTML5 list now. So there's HTML5 template, right?
The template tag is still in there.
It is?
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, you could even look at saying, you know, you create your Facebook page and, you know, depending on what device you have, you have to figure out yourself. but we could actually do HTML5 template if you want. You know, there's all sorts of things, or, you know, on some clients we don't, there's things we could look at like that as well. So I think that's sort of where JSF, you know, strength lies in what you can do on the server that you can't do with a fully client, fully JavaScript application on the client.
There was talk at one point, Ed, of breaking out the components
separate.
And is that a possibility? I know you're focused on the HTTP2 support and some of
mm-hmm.
these other things. These improvements that Keto's talking about are more on the client renderer, you know,
mm-hmm.
side of things. But I think are very important to adoption of JSF and its success. I don't know how best to get resources to it, because I agree with Keto that these types of improvements, whether it's Ajax with JSON or having better render kits that do that. When are they going to get done? I mean, if we're not doing it in this one, when are we going to do these incremental improvements?
So what about making it easier to have different renderers? I mean, it's fairly easy already, but maybe we can make it even easier.
Yeah, but these things are more than just rendering.
No, but the JSON rendering thing you're talking about, that's not a render kit concern. I think that's more...
It's more of a hook.
Yeah.
But what I mean in general, though, it's like what we talked about before, it's like, you know, the scope is, it's limited, but are there areas that you guys think we could help you out so that it becomes easier to plug into the framework that before were a little bit awkward?
Right. It's definitely true for the JSON rendering. Like I can actually see where to, because I did it, but I did it in a way where,
Right.
If it looks like it, that's very different. And it added in a very specific case as opposed to a general case. So.
So it's not a rendering concern. It's not. Wouldn't the renderer say, "Oh, I'm in an AJAX request. I'm going to render JSON rather"?
Yeah,
than
I think it would be a rendering concern, but it wouldn't be a render kit per se or a separate renderer per se.
Well, that's kind of the disjunct between partial execution of a life cycle focus as a full. I mean, in my opinion, it should have been, but that's the past stage. Because then it would have been easier to support other use cases, because in all reality, if you really look at a partial execution, it really is a full execution. The only difference is, you're rendering something a different app. So then JSON would have been another opportunity, because just saying, hey, boom, I'm rendering this out now. So that's what I'm saying, if we can deliver the correct kind of hooks that make that possible, then, if you don't want to do JSON, hey, if you want to render out PDF, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But right now, it requires more work.
Right, yeah, and there has to be hooks on the client, too, not the other piece, because you want, to be able to have a place where, the payload and be able to get it back.
So is your concern about the big... a big partial response containing all the TRs and the TDs. Is it the size? Or is it the big DOM replacement?
It's actually the size of response. A lot of complaints when I work with people, they're like, how come I'm getting this 50K less exaggeration with payback?
Got it.
And some of that could be done with the components, right?
We're just out of time. Can I butt in? Because before you drill down, there's one other really important thing, I think, which goes between the groups, is that the whole area of priorities, I think, if we don't do anything about it, sorry to completely change subject, but I got to run. Is what's going to happen is the browsers will send us priorities, and the first we'll know about it is that we'll try and write out something, and we'll just block it. Just won't. The browsers are, I don't want that now.
You're talking about stream priorities, priorities.
And so if we don't do anything about it, the first thing we'll know about it is as we've committed all the resources to generate a response. We're trying to write the response out. And we just block after writing a few little bytes because it's low priority and everything else is progressing and we can't progress that stream. And so given that HTTP2 has the capability to spray 30, 40, 50, 80 requests over our server, do we really want to go processing all those 80 requests only to find out at the render stage that it's a low priority request and we really shouldn't have committed all that time generating it?
Mm-hmm.
Getting that priority information, if it's coming from the client, and maybe not dispatch, and maybe trying to dispatch in priority order. And then the other that comes into is mechanical sympathy. If you've got 32 calls and you've got one client sends you 32 requests, or you decide you've got to push 32 responses to them, do we really want to spray those across all our 32 calls and hold up the same user instance, the same view in every somebody's core, and they all contend on the same synchronization thing? Or do we want to be a little bit smarter about our scheduling and try only say one or two cores for that one user to let the other cores have hot caches for other people? And the thing is, if we don't do anything about priorities and we don't think about scheduling, then we are going to end up with 30, 40 requests sprayed across all our cores, caches will never be hot, and we'll be generating from cold caches content that the browser doesn't want to come on it.
Right.
So that's a really big problem identification, and I have no idea how to solve it. I mean, in Jetty, we're trying to do some smart scheduling algorithms we call eat what you kill. But I don't know. Basically, if you start doing something, you use the same core to finish it. But I think there's only so much you can do at that level. And so I think that's why bringing it into JSF awareness that, if you're going to get priorities, that you might want to bring it into some scheduling and how you dispatch and things like that. And then that might feed back to what you need from the server API in order to achieve that. You can tell it, don't bother dispatching these requests to me. I know they're low priority. Deal with these ones. Dispatch threads to these ones first.
Hmm.
which, you know, ties back into what JSF does with regards to, you know, the Ajax response model.
Mm-hmm.
They already have some small capability to say, yeah, whatever. You know, but that might be another area that, you know, we would love EG involvement to see, hey, can we get that to a better state where, you know, it's more configurable or extensible.
Okay. All right. Well, this was a good kickoff meeting. For JSF, we never really were a group that does lots of conference calls. So I kind of like it that way. And for Servlet, did you guys do lots of conference calls in the past?
I think I can remember one.
All right, then. Good. So we're...
Yeah.
We are mostly asynchronous. All right. So... that's it for this one. We'll maybe do some occasionally as the need arises, but I think this was a fun and productive thing, and we do have some action items to find some use case validation for server push. So that's the biggest thing I'd like people to take away. So, all right, thank you, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your Java 1 week, and thanks on the call. We'll see you all when we get back. Ian, we'll talk to you a little bit before our meeting tonight.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, thank you.
Goodbye. Keep best lighting between, I'm going to need River, like, you know, Rev 2.0.